If you're from my generation or older, you will have probably heard of Christopher Reeve. He was, of course, the famous actor who played Superman and the archetypal strong hero. You may not have heard about his wife, Dana Morosini, or their relationship issues. Despite Superman's invincible courage, Christopher was, in fact, terrified of marriage due to his parents' messy divorce. And after 5 years of dating Dana, his fear of commitment caused strains on their relationship, and it took an entire year of therapy for Christopher to finally admit his vulnerabilities, which saved his relationship and helped him develop the confidence to get married. Sadly, 3 short years later, Christopher was paralyzed from the neck down in a horse riding accident. Dana's unwavering support for him and Christopher's openness about his struggles and his dependency on her brought them much closer, transforming their vulnerability into a foundation of mutual strength. And their story beautifully illustrates that even if you're Superman, it's vulnerability that creates strength. When it comes to relationships, there are many enigmas or paradoxes, if you will. In fact, I have a list of 20 of them right here. And coincidentally, that's what we'll be talking about today on the episode. So hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast, studying the psychology of self-improvement with me, Sam Webster Harris. And today, diving into the puzzles of passion, the labyrinths of love, and unraveling the riddles of romance. With my tongue twisters out the way, we've started strong with the fact that vulnerability is actually a strength. I think Brené Brown says it best when she says, it's not fear that gets in the way of showing up, it's armor. It's the behaviors we use to self-protect. We can be afraid and brave at the same time. Armor suffocates courage and cages our hearts. So instead, we need to strip away our emotional armor to truly be vulnerable. Now, following this, we have the fact that it's those closest to our hearts who can hurt us the most. As I say, it's only someone you really love that can make you really sad. Of course, there's the risk of the breakup and loss, but it's also our trivial unspoken needs. Alain de Botton says, at the heart of the sulk lies a confusing mixture of intense anger and an equally intense desire not to communicate what one is angry about. The sulker both desperately needs the other person to understand and yet remains utterly committed to doing nothing to help them to do so. The very need to explain forms the kernel of the insult. If the partner requires an explanation, he or she is clearly not worthy of one. We should add that it is a privilege to be the recipient of a sulk. It means the other person respects and trusts us enough to think we should understand their unspoken hurt. It is one of the odder gifts of love. This means that we find that if we really love someone, we can be profoundly shocked and even hurt when they can't read our minds despite it being physically impossible. So it's not just the vulnerability that leaves us open to pain. It can be the close connection that leaves us feeling hurt and unseen by someone who we expect to see us. Now, there are a few things here on the fact that opposites are often right next to each other. Next, we have the paradox that disgusting is right next to delightful. And I've actually never heard anyone say exactly what I'm about to say. And it's one of my odder brain farts, perhaps, that you get exclusively for being a listener of the show. But I find it curious that genitals themselves are amazingly interesting, attractive, and an enjoyable body part if they belong to someone we desire. And yet, the most gross and disgusting thing possible on anyone who we are not into. And it's a very binary sentiment between one of the best feelings that makes people happy to be alive to, ew, I'm going to be sick, and this person deservedly needs to go to jail for the trauma they are causing. And to be fair, I'm not the only person interested in this general dichotomy. Alain de Botton does highlight that kissing is a totally revolting activity, but the intimacy of allowing our partner access to our face and a specifically big wet hole for speaking, breathing, and eating is a very bonding thing somehow. It creates the connection and feelings of joy and security by allowing intimate access to a most private part of ourselves. This perhaps explains the less controversial paradox of craving for attention versus repulsing against it. Humans all crave attention, and to be made to feel attractive and needed, and of course, sexual attention. Yet, too much attention in general is repulsive, especially too much sexual attention, even more so when not requested. And this is why it's such a delicate balance embarking in romance. Because basically, when you say you like someone, it is admitting dirty thoughts. Yet telling a stranger your dirty thoughts about them instantly could be called abusive. And even if they are thinking them too, they still might assume that you're an abusive person. Instead, it's a game of trepidatiously incrementing the levels of intimacy through careful and considerate advances, and of course, reciprocation. One of our issues in society today for both sexes is that a guy is a complete tool for introducing himself to a lady. Of course, catcalling is wrong and derogatory, but respectfully sparking a conversation can be a very enjoyable experience on both sides. Women want to be spoken to in real life by confident and kind men, rather than dealing with Tinder. Yet men are terrified to talk to women for being seen as overstepping a boundary, besides the fact that it was already scary to approach people. And so, no one wins here. Ultimately, my advice to men is to just learn how to consistently say hello without being creepy, for women not to shame guys for talking to you unless they are genuinely overstepping your boundaries. Anyway, rant over, we can move away from the opposing emotions existing right next to each other to the concept of physical distance. Distance can breed closeness. Being physically apart can be very healthy and give you a chance to miss each other. Too much distance can be bad. I was in Nepal for 3 months and it was more than my relationship needed, and I didn't actually enjoy being away that long. But equally, being in the same place together all day, doing all the same activities together, is too much. Early in a relationship, it can be very exciting to see each other every day. But if you remember from the Science of Love episode about losing our rationality due to all our hormones firing away, it can be very useful to have some space in a relationship to help you think rationally about what you're doing and to give yourself time to process things and be your best self. Another interesting point about distance is that it can be the event of nearly losing someone that can help bring a relationship closer together. Now, this nicely introduces the conflict-unity paradox. Conflict in itself is not a bad thing. Healthy conflict is actually how you make improvements. An interesting thought experiment to carry out that I'm sure no Miss Universe has ever tried is what would be bad about complete world peace? Because although war is terrible, some form of unsettled questioning of the status quo is required to create change and progress. If we had peace for the entire history of humanity, we'd still have kings with their heirs inheriting entire kingdoms. So conflict is actually an essential, if not painful, ingredient to progress. In a relationship, navigating disagreements constructively and resolving our differences allows partners to deepen their understanding and respect for each other. This leads directly into the spicy topic of accepting a partner as they are versus growing them, or controversially, changing them. We should accept and love our partner as they are. And that is true if we do genuinely love them and we don't just love an idea of them. Like, full stop, there is no but here. Inconveniently, as a partner, we are also the one that knows them most intimately and their weaknesses and their strengths, and we should be their biggest supporter for change. That is, the changes that they want to make and the things they want to do. We should be their cheerleader for personal growth who accepts their failures along the way. But perhaps this does mean sometimes holding them accountable for bad decisions that might get in the way of their happiness. It's a very interesting line here, because what we might think of as our partner's happiness might be different to them than it is for us. Let's say someone doesn't like board games, but we really enjoy them. Trying to change their interests is a bad sign. However, if they have a negative behavior pattern around work, say due to some confidence issues, and they overwork and they neglect self-care or even sleeping, we could perhaps help them by getting them to set boundaries and keeping them accountable to them so that they don't burn out. And that might be a positive form of change. Yet, of course, constantly telling your partner not to work so much could be too much. So it's very nuanced, and just saying that we should never change anything in someone is a very fixed mindset way of looking at it. If you're accepting that people might be able to work towards the best interests of others and have respectful and good intentions at heart. Something that might help here is the paradox between perfect and imperfect. We all have this delightful idea of the perfect romance, but that actually leads to disappointment. By embracing imperfections instead, we can have much more fulfilling relationships. I think we're given this very naive version of love where everything is easy and perfect. Yet actually, love only starts when you've been exposed to imperfections of your partner or endured difficult scenarios, and yet you still give love. Accepting and loving someone for their flaws is love. And it's what makes a relationship genuinely fulfilling, because you love someone despite their flaws. Now, of course, romantic love is conditional. If I was a racist, sexist, and emotionally and physically abusive partner, my partners should leave me. But it is okay to have some flaws, and that's completely human and normal, and that's part of accepting a partner. Again, another seamless segue into the fact that we have these issues around realities and expectations. We can walk into relationships with too many expectations, and that makes it hard to accept the realities, such as imperfection. I think so many people are ready to leave a relationship early because they have a very rigid view of love that they create too many boundaries around, and it makes them inflexible. When you study it, in fact, the biggest determinant of success in relationships is the willingness to be flexible and accept change. In software development, we can have a scenario where an error from a bug is actually decided to be left in as a feature. Maybe like the mouse doesn't work to click a button, but actually no one should ever click that button, and so it's just left. Anyway, often a weakness in a partner can be part of a strength. Now, for example, I don't make as much money as I could be making if I had a job in tech or was running a billion-dollar business, but I do have a lot of free time for my partner, and I don't overwork, and I can live wherever she wants. Maybe we might have issues with our partner because they're too stubborn, and we might wish for them to be less stubborn. Yet stubborn people are much more likely to stick to a commitment. Or perhaps you have a partner who is emotional and takes things personally or could be easily overwhelmed. But emotional people can also be much more empathetic and attuned to their partner's feelings. So often, whatever is the weakness or imperfection in our partner might just be part of their strength. And as we should learn in life, that you can't have everything all at once. So it's important to celebrate the strengths of our partners instead of condemning their weaknesses. And as if I planned it or something, we have the next issue of equality and diversity. And creating equality in relationships comes through celebrating our differences. That means recognizing each other's strengths and weaknesses. The partner who is good at planning adventures can take more responsibility in booking weekend activities, whilst the partner with an eye for interior design should make the decisions on the household decor. Now, these divisions of responsibility can be very easy when it's a direct trade, like perhaps one is better at cooking pasta and the other is better at cooking curry. It can be clearly even if you have one curry night a week and one pasta night a week. However, the key thing here is to realize that our strengths might lie in areas that are our values. So let's say I value keeping things clean, and I might end up feeling like I'm always doing the cleaning. Yet my partner perhaps values planning, and she keeps us organized and on time. We might both feel like we are running around doing lots of work, keeping the household together, and dealing with the mess and chaos that our partner creates, without recognizing our partner's efforts on the things that we don't value. So this can often be a cause of conflict that requires open communication and an ability to see the values that our partners value as opposed to just what we see. It also means recognizing things like style of communication. Some people might find it difficult to have arguments in real time through conversation and might prefer to have things written down. Other things to recognize are attachment styles, personal preferences, and generally just making accommodations to help each other perform at our best, especially in the moments when we might be prone to performing at our worst. More topics coming up after the break, including selfishness, privacy and transparency, and things like spontaneity and passion. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. A common misconception about relationships is that they have to be effortless and natural, but no one is perfect, and that means both our partners and ourselves need work, and that's fine. Sometimes the best relationships happen when both people put in the work to make them great. I used BetterHelp last year when I first started dating my current partner, and it really helped me to understand how I could be a better partner myself. It really improved our relationship, as well as my relationship with myself. And I would certainly say that therapy isn't just for people who've experienced major trauma, and it can help anybody to be their best selves. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and conveniently flexible to meet your schedule. Just fill in a simple questionnaire and you can be matched with a therapist within a day. So become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for another soulmate as well or not. Visit betterhelp.com/growth mindset today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/growth, G-R-O-W-T-H, growth mindset. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. I work personally with many entrepreneurs who I always recommend to keep LinkedIn front of mind for hiring because it's so consistently useful and reliable. It isn't just a jobs board, but a social network of more than a billion professionals, giving you access to a diversity of professionals that you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all of that whilst making the process easy and intuitive. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. LinkedIn even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker and less political. There's clearly a reason that 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/growth. That's linkedin.com/growth, G-R-O-W-T-H, to post your job for free. And like all good things in life, terms and conditions apply. Okay, next we have the effort versus ease paradox. We often think that the best relationships will be easy. Sadly, even the relationships that we witness looking so strong still require an immense amount of effort. Like the duck that seems to glide elegantly across the surface of a lake. Yet, if you peer beneath the surface, the legs are kicking with a frantic, relentless energy. A truly good relationship is hard, no matter what. And if you expect for it to be hard, then your life gets a lot easier because expecting a relationship to be easy makes relationships harder. It's always worth remembering that most things worth doing aren't easy. Yes, the right partner for you will be better than a lot of your other partners, but they won't be without their problems. As we've already mentioned, there is no such thing as perfect. One of the things in relationships that is never easy is navigating the selfish versus altruist paradox. This highlights the need for a nuanced understanding of how prioritizing one's own needs, that is selfishness, whilst balancing that with the needs of a partner, being an altruist, and the fact that these can coexist beneficially. A certain degree of self-focused behavior is not only compatible with romance, but in fact, essential for nurturing a healthy, supportive relationship. Practicing self-love and self-care means recognizing and attending to one's own needs, desires, and well-being, ranging from physical care to mental and emotional health. It's more likely to bring positivity, energy, stability, and support into a relationship. It's genuinely similar to the importance of rest and sleep that allows you to be able to do your best work. However, prioritizing one's needs should not transform into disregarding the partner's needs. We should be attentive to their desires and well-being. And the issue is this might not always be obvious. Self-care isn't just a day in isolation, restoring yourself like having a spa day. It might be asking for words of affirmation from your partner. But this could be confusing when we are highly aware of our own unmet needs, but not the needs, but we're not at all aware about the unspoken and unmet needs of our partner. We need to practice open communication and establish healthy boundaries that prioritize both self-care and relationship care between the both of us. And as always, the secret to any relationships is compromise. Next, we have another thorny issue, which is the topic of transparency versus privacy. Openness and honesty are pillars of a strong relationship, as is good communication. That means being forthcoming with information that affects the relationship and being authentic and open to foster trust. But we also have to respect each other's privacy. Privacy in the context of a relationship refers to the right of each partner to have their own personal space, their own thoughts, and their own aspects of their life that they keep to themselves. Freedom to engage with personal hobbies, maintain individual friendships, and have some time alone. The key here is trust. So if we start deciding what a partner can or can't do or checking their private messages, this starts to erode trust. We should also remember that as individuals, we might have different needs here, but you do have to respect each other's boundaries. It's often that opposites attract, and things like extroversion versus introversion might have some different needs. One partner might easily and regularly be sharing all their thoughts with a friend or family member, whilst the other might be much more private. So if one partner doesn't feel comfortable with your friends knowing the finer points of their digestion issues, you kind of have to learn to start keeping that to yourself. And this can be really hard for shared issues like perhaps pregnancy or work troubles, and it can make a difficult situation even more difficult for the both of you if you haven't established boundaries that you can both abide by, and it can feel like eroding one's freedoms. And on the subject of freedom, we now have the next paradox, which is the freedom versus commitment paradox. And we see this paradox in so many things in life besides relationships. Commitment might seem like it limits freedom, but it can actually offer much greater freedom in the long run. Like a writer who decides on a topic for a book and sticks to it, as opposed to writing random different blog articles every single day. You have to let go of the optionality to reap the rewards of commitment. You can do anything in life, but you can't do everything. When we look at a committed relationship, the security and trust established allow for both partners to explore life and their own potential more fully. The secure base fosters a sense of freedom to pursue goals, dreams, and personal growth, and of course, a reliable shared home and even a family. This is only possible knowing that they have a supportive partner alongside them. But just to keep you on your toes here, there's a seemingly conflicting paradox of predictability versus spontaneity. Predictable relationships are comforting and the bedrock of stability, but it's the spontaneity and unpredictable moments in life that keep love fresh and alive. We have to find balance between routine and adventure, between comfort and passion, and these all need to be met. Some of this can be done with routine, perhaps a regular routine like date night you can do, but make sure that you do very different things for it. Don't go to the same restaurant each week. And perhaps maybe even once a month, one partner makes the plans for the date in secret to make it even more of a surprise. It's important to not assume that you know everything about your partner and to seek ways to surprise each other and be adventurous in both your plans and your questions and your attitude towards the relationship. And that really helps keep the spark of spontaneity and vibrancy and makes a longer relationship still feel like a journey of self-discovery, as opposed to routine mundanity. Now, lastly, we have the problem of independence versus interdependence. I did go into some depth into parts of this topic on the last episode, as independence and autonomy is crucial for a good relationship and friendship. However, it's equally important to have interdependence in a relationship and to be able to rely on each other, not perhaps from a place of necessity, but for mutual support and strength. It isn't wrong to be needy towards your partner, as they are the one who has agreed to meet your needs. A relationship is literally an exchanging of needs. However, you must be secure about your individuality to not create an unhealthy attachment that goes too far, that perhaps becomes selfish or doesn't respect your partner's right to privacy or their own self-care. The healthiest relationships are those where both partners can be together without losing themselves, and understanding that personal space and individual growth are keys to a truly lasting bond. As we look towards wrapping this up, you may remember that I started with the story of Christopher Reeve, the Superman actor who became paralyzed in a horse riding accident. He and his wife had loved horse riding so much, and she had even ridden since she was a little girl. But after his accident, she said, "I stopped riding primarily because he loved it so much, and I think it really would have been painful for him if I was going off riding and he wasn't able to. And it wasn't that much of a sacrifice for me to drop." They were that cute. As we've mentioned, relationships are about making sacrifices. Sadly, 9 years after his accident, Christopher Reeve fell into a coma after a reaction to his medication and died at the young age of 52. 10 months later, after his death, his wife Dana was diagnosed with lung cancer despite never being a smoker. Tragically, within a year, she was also dead at the young age of just 44. As we've discussed the paradoxes of love, it's worth discussing a paradox of life. It is so full of beauty and yet so full of tragedy. The reason we can have So much joy is also the reason that we can have so much pain. And I do believe that being a good person will come back to you. However, I also believe that life is very short and it can be incredibly unfair sometimes. So whatever words you haven't said or things you haven't done with your life, remember that the only person that will make you do them is yourself. There is no backup life for a second attempt once you've learned from all the mistakes in this one. You have to make all the mistakes and fix them here, now, in this life. So whatever you need to do, go do it. Don't let anyone stop you from doing it. And I hope this episode helped you understand how to create more balance in your relationships and life. With that, if anything inspired you or made you think, please do share it with a friend or hit me up with a comment or rating wherever you're listening. If you have any questions, drop me a message at growthmindsetpodcast@gmail.com or hit me up on Instagram or in the comments. I do really love hearing from you. And remember that life is short. There's no point putting off happiness behind some goals. As they say, desire is a contract to be unhappy until you achieve it. So chill out and be kind to yourself. And whilst you're at it, be kind to someone else too.